Hello and welcome to our special Christmas episode of Spooky Girls, the podcast where we explore all sorts of real-life paranormal and creepy occurrences, from ghost sightings and hauntings to reported alien and cryptid encounters, myths, folklore, legends and more. Every episode we cover a different true spooky story. We're your hosts. I'm Katrina.
And I'm Jasmine. Good evening and Merry Christmas. It's been a while. It's been a long while.
It's been a while.
It's been a couple months.
I mean, we're back for a special Christmas episode. We're not back yet because I am still having daily mental breakdowns over university and literally just do not have time to do anything apart from
cry
about university and sleep.
Oh baby. But yes, we thought that we would come by and say hi and give you guys a little bit of a Christmas season's greetings, or whatever season it is in which you are listening to this. I guess I do plan on having this out by Christmas, so wish me luck. We are recording this on the 21st, so I should have a bit of time.
Good luck, Jasmine.
Thank you. We have missed you all very, very much, so we hope you enjoy. Hope you enjoy this little offering.
What's the plan for this episode, Jasmine?
So guys, today we will be doing, I have called this episode a very Victorian Ghostmas, and that is because we shall be looking at the good old-fashioned Victorian Christmas tradition of telling ghost stories. And yes, so if that sounds like a strange thing to do, then don't worry, because everything the Victorians did was very strange, very macabre.
That sounds amazing.
Yes, I do. I mean, I don't wish I was around in the Victorian times, because I probably would have died of the plague or something else, really. plague wasn't around at that point, no. But I don't know. Cholera, good old cholera.
Yeah, cholera.
I am a big fan. I am a really big fan of their Christmas festivities, and you will see why. So what's going to happen is, first of all, I will read you a brief contextual introduction to Victorian Christmas and all of that lovely stuff, and give you a bit of historical background and something just to give you a flavour of why the Victorians had this very strange tradition. And also after that, I will take a brief pause and we will be giving a quiz to Katrina, as is my favorite thing to do, is quiz Katty on things that she knows nothing about. Or does she? Katty is very clever and she is a historian, so she might actually know what these weird words mean. Yeah, I think that's going to be a lot of fun, and I hope that I hope that you guys enjoy it too. And then after that, we shall be reading for the main event. We will be reading a ghost story called, what's it called? A Ghost Summons, I believe it's called.
Yeah.
And that is by, oh, this woman sounds French. The Ghost Summons by Ada Buisson. I don't know if she's French. Maybe she's French. Yeah. Who knows? Yes, that will be happening at the very end. And that is how we will be doing the episode today.
Lovely. Perfect. Can't wait.
Right, so let's hop on in. The ghosts of Christmas's past, present and future are not the only spectres who haunted the festive hearths of the Victorian home. Christmas, much like most things in 1800s Britain, was a thoroughly morbid affair. Not even the dear baby Jesus was safe from the popular Victorian obsession with death and paranormality. With the days growing shorter, darker, and colder, there wasn't much else to do to pass the time other than gathering around the roaring flames of the fireplace and sharing ghastly tales to spook friends and family. Supernatural horror was a popular theme in Victorian art and literature. A large part of this hinged upon mid-century breakthroughs in the biomedical sciences. As humanity learned more about the physical body, cause for concern arose for one's spiritual existence too. Science was new and frightening. Perceived threats of invisible disease, incurable madness, contagion, and fragile mortality influenced the prominent fiction writers of the time. Horror novels explored these widespread fears, with books such as Frankenstein and Dracula offering implicit biblical warnings against transgressing God's natural order. Supplemented with the gory body horror shockers offered in the salacious pages of Penny Dreadfuls, life after death was less of an obsession, really, and more of an era-defining societal characteristic. Vampires and zombies aside, ghosts were the most common supernatural entity tied specifically to Christmas. Spurred on by the so-called Dickens effect, short gothic ghost stories with themes of redemption and retribution were all the rage. The Valancourt Book of Victorian Ghost Stories collects a selection of the most popular spooky Victorian Christmas tales. We're going to read one of them in just a moment. Right, there's a bit of context for you. So it's quiz time now for Catty. So Catty, I'm going to now list some spooky or downright strange and silly Victorian traditions, and I would like you to take a stab at defining them. So these words, so it's going to be a bit like a Who Wants to Be a Millionaire kind of arrangement. So I'm going to read the question and you can ask me to define it in terms of a sentence and also to tell you whether or not it's a verb or a noun. And those are the only two things I will tell you. I can give you some hints, possibly, but I think that should be enough. Okay. Again, I might just be silly and I just haven't heard these words before, but these are a collection of words pertaining to various strange Victorian Christmas traditions. So, first of all, what does it mean to go mumping?
To go mumping.
Mumping.
Use it in a sentence.
She went mumping last night and came home none the richer.
When you initially said it, it reminded me of mumming, which is like a type of play. So I'm going to say it's like caroling.
Caroling, okay. It's actually begging. It is when a toothless poor woman would collect alms on St. Thomas's Day, which is today, the 21st of December. It's also called going a gooding. Or Thomasing.
There
you go. She was out Thomasing last night, the dirty wench. I must say, when I heard mumping, I thought that was prostitution. I was like, that sounds like a very strange Victorian word for a lady of the night. Okay. Question two. What is furmenty?
Furmenty.
Furmenty. F-U-R-M-E-N-T-Y. Furmenty.
Is it related to fermenting something?
I don't know. Is it? Well,
is it in a sense?
Okay. Cook prepared fermenty to go with our Christmas dinner.
Fermenty. I am going to say it's a type of fermented cabbage.
Close. It is a kind of wheat porridge. So, I mean, like, I don't really know why. I'm guessing they called it fermenty because it's a bit like how beer has to ferment.
Yeah.
But, I've also written out an old English passage. This is from actually the 1300s. This was the first known recording of fermenty. So it is a wheat porridge, either savory or sweet. And this is, I don't know how to read old English, so here we go. Nim clean wheat and bray it in a mortar well, that the holy's gone all of, and say it yet till it breast, and nim it up, and lat it cool, and nim fair fresh broth, and sweet milk of almonds or sweet milk of kine, and temper it all, and nim the yolks of Eriwyn. Boil it a little, it actually says, boil it a little, spelt L-I-T-Y-L, boil spelt B-O-Y-L-E, this is a riot, and set yit adoon, and mess yit forth, wit fat venison, and fresh mutton. I'm guessing that means mutton.
Yes.
So, really, really clear instructions there on how to make it, if you wish.
I like how it's literally written in an accent.
Yes, it's. I think it's meant to be like Northern English.
Yeah,
like a bit like, you know, when you read Scottish Twitter.
Yeah,
it's like phonetic. Adoon sounds Scottish. I'm guessing that Nim means take.
I don't know, but I love it. I have to deal with phonetic writing out a lot in my university stuff, because it's true, like, they didn't have a standard way of spelling things. It was literally just however you say that word, you write how that's how you
imagine. Say it. I mean that's pretty much what we all do now still, like, in school. But I mean, I must say, I don't know what milk of kine is. And how's almonds was actually spelt Almandis. Sweaty milk of kine. Okay. K-Y-N-E. Kine? Kin?
I don't know.
Maybe it's a kind of animal. I don't know. Maybe they had weird animals back. I don't know. I'm not gonna. Anyway. Fermenty is a porridge. And apparently it was a very popular side dish to Christmas dinners. Mm. Back then. So, number three. What was wassailing?
To
wassail.
I know this.
Tell me. Don't let your child go wassailing. He isn't old enough.
Well, that is caroling, isn't it?
Close. What kind of caroling is it? There's a specific thing about it which makes it different to caroling straight up.
That they get given, like, beer and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Precisely correct. The act of drinking alcoholic apple punch, which was shared in a large bowl and can be poured over apple tree roots to usher in a good harvest. But then you must salute the apple tree. Mm. And in the 1930s, it was written that it had evolved to refer to a kind of boozy begging in which one would sing carols to earn wassail, or alcohol, yeah, not money, right?
Yeah.
Well done, Katie.
Because it was in our last year's Christmas episode, because that's what the Mary Lloyd people were doing.
There we go. Oh my god. You see, look at that. That's some spooky gals lore for you there, folks. Ooh. And yes, and you can also listen to that one if you scroll back far enough through the podcast episodes.
Go enjoy. If you like shit talking horse skeletons.
Yeah, which I mean come on, who doesn't? I mean, also, I thought you said shit talking horse skeletons, and I was like, that's my kind of skeleton. Oh,
horse.
Yeah.
Horse.
It might be a hoary horse, you never know. And finally, question four, what is snapdragon?
It's a type of flower.
No. A game of snapdragon.
Oh, as a card game.
No. Okay. I'm going to give it to you in a sentence in case you know vaguely what it is and not the name of it. Henry hurt himself rather badly playing snapdragon, and now he has no eyebrows.
is it something to do with fire?
Yes. Fire is correct. But what is the fire on, and what are they doing to the fire?
I have no idea.
Okay, it's basically like apple bobbing, but with fire. You pour alcohol over some fruit, you set it on fire, and then you have to pick it up with your mouth.
Jesus.
Without getting hurt. Yes. very, very fun. Great Christmas
that.
Game.
Yeah.
This is meant to be the most popular game in Victorian Britain at Christmas time. So if they weren't, like, scared shitless with a story about a ghost, they were burning off their fucking faces. And apparently they really liked it because when people leaned over the flames, their faces looked all shadowy and demonic.
Oh.
I mean, okay. Come on. The Victorians, they really just... I mean, I'm emo, but that's fucking emo. Mm-hmm. Jesus. Anyway.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that was amazing. Thank you, John.
I'll give you... That was... But yes, now for the main event. So, Katrina, do you have your script?
I do.
Yes. So, guys, we will now be reading The Ghost's Summons by Ada Boisson, however you pronounce her fucking name.
It was in the early days of my professional career, when patients were scarce and fees scarcer, And though I was in the act of sitting down to my chop, and had promised myself a glass of steaming punch afterwards in honour of the Christmas season, I hurried instantly into my surgery. I entered briskly, but no sooner did I catch sight of the figure standing leaning against the counter than I started back with a strange feeling of horror which for the life of me I could not comprehend. Never shall I forget the ghastliness of that face, the white horror stamped upon every feature, the agony which seemed to sink the very eyes beneath the contracted brows. It was awful to me to behold, accustomed as I was to scenes of terror. "You seek advice?" I began with some hesitation.
"No, I'm not ill."
"You require then..."
"Hush," he interrupted, approaching more nearly and dropping his already low murmur to a mere whisper. "I believe you are not rich. Would you be willing to earn £1,000?
£1,000? His words seemed to burn my very ears. "I should be thankful if I could do so honestly," I replied with dignity. "What is the service required of me?"
A peculiar look of intense horror passed over the white face before me, but the blue-black lips answered firmly, "To attend a deathbed."
£1,000 to attend a deathbed? Where am I to go then? Whose is it?
Mine.
The voice in which this was said sounded so hollow and distant that involuntarily I shrank back. Yours? What nonsense! You are not a dying man. You are pale, but you appear perfectly healthy. You...
Hush, he interrupted. I know all this. You cannot be more convinced of my physical health than I am myself, yet I know that before the clock tolls the first hour after midnight, I shall be a dead man.
But...
He shuddered slightly, but, stretching out his hand commandingly, motioned me to be silent. I am but too well informed of what I affirm, he said quietly. I have received a mysterious summons from the dead. No mortal aid can avail me. I am as doomed as the wretch on whom the judge has passed sentence. I do not come either to seek your advice or to argue the matter with you, but simply to buy your services. I offer you £1,000 to pass the night in my chamber and witness the scene which takes place. The sum may appear to you extravagant, but I have no further use to count the cost of any gratification, and the spectacle you would have to witness is no common sight of horror.
The words, strange as they were spoken calmly enough, but as the last sentence dropped slowly from the livid lips, an expression of such wild horror again passed over the stranger's face that, in spite of the immense fee, I hesitated to answer.
You fear to trust the prophecy of a dead man? See here and be convinced, he exclaimed eagerly, and the next instant, on the counter between us, lay a parchment document, and following the indication of that white muscular hand, I read the words, "And to Mr. Frederick Keed, of 14 High Street, Alton, I bequeath the sum of £1,000 for certain services rendered to me. I have had that will drawn up within the last 24 hours, and I signed it an hour ago, in the presence of a competent witness. I'm prepared, you see. Now, do you accept my offer or not?"
My answer was to walk across the room and take down my hat, and then lock the door of the surgery communicating with the house. It was a dark, icy cold night, and somehow the courage and determination which the sight of my own name in connection with £1,000 had given me flagged considerably as I found myself hurried along through the silent darkness by a man whose deathbed I was about to attend. He was grimly silent, but as his hand touched mine, in spite of the frost, it felt like a burning coal. On we went, tramp, tramp through the snow, on, till even I grew weary, and at length on my appalled ear struck the chimes of a church clock, while close at hand I distinguished the snowy hillocks of a churchyard. Heavens, was this awful scene of what I was to be witness to take place veritably amongst the dead?
11, groaned the doomed man. Gracious God, but 2 hours more, and that ghostly messenger will bring the summons. Come, come, for mercy's sake, let us hasten.
There was but a short road separating us now from the wall which surrounded a large mansion, and along this we hastened until we reached a small door. Passing through this, in a few minutes we were stealthily ascending the private staircase to a splendidly furnished apartment, which left no doubt of the wealth of its owner. All was intensely silent, however, through the house, and about this room in particular there was a stillness that, as I gazed around, struck me as completely ghastly.
My companion glanced at the clock on the mantel shelf and sank into a large chair by the side of the fire with a shudder. Only 1.5 hours longer, he muttered. Great heaven, I thought I had more fortitude. This horror unmans me. Then, in a fiercer tone, and clutching my arm, he added, You mock me. You think me mad, but wait till you see, wait till you see.
I put my hand on his wrist, for there was now a fever in his sunken eyes which checked the superstitious chill which had been gathering over me, and made me hope that, after all, my first suspicion was correct, and that my patient was but the victim of some fearful hallucination. Mock you, I answered soothingly. Far from it. I sympathise intensely with you, and would do much to aid you. You require sleep. Lie down and leave me to watch. He groaned, but rose, and began throwing off his clothes, and watching my opportunity, I slipped a sleeping powder, which I had managed to put in my pocket before leaving the surgery, into the tumbler of claret that stood beside him. The more I saw, the more I felt convinced that it was the nervous system of a patient who required my attention. And it was with severe satisfaction I saw him drink the wine, and then stretch himself on the luxurious bed. Ha, I thought, as the clock struck 12, and instead of a groan, the deep breathing of the sleeper sounded through the room. You won't receive any summons tonight, and I may make myself comfortable. Noiselessly, therefore, I replenished the fire, poured myself out a large glass of wine, and drawing the curtains so that the firelight should not disturb the sleeper, I put myself in a position to follow his example. How long I slept I know not, but suddenly I aroused with a start and as ghostly a thrill of horror as ever I remember to have felt in my life.
Something, what I knew not, seemed near, something nameless, but unutterably awful. I gazed round. The fire emitted a blue glow, just sufficient to enable me to see that the room was exactly the same as when I fell asleep, but that the long hand of the clock wanted but 5 minutes of the mysterious hour which was to be the death moment of the summoned man. Was there anything in it, then? Any truth in the strange story he had told? The silence was intense. I could not even hear a breath from the bed, and I was about to rise and approach when, again, that awful horror seized me, and I saw at the same moment my eye fell upon the mirror opposite the door, and I saw, great heaven, that awful shape, that ghastly mockery of what had been humanity. Was it really a messenger from the buried, quiet dead?
It stood there in visible death clothes, but the awful face was ghastly with corruption, and the sunken eyes gleamed forth a green, glassy glare which seemed a veritable blast from the infernal fires below. To move or utter a sound in that hideous presence was impossible. I sat and saw that horrid shape move slowly towards the bed. What was the awful scene enacted there, I know not. I heard nothing, except a low, stifled, agonized groan, and I saw the shadow of that ghastly messenger bend over the bed.
Whether it was some dreadful but wordless sentence its breathless lips conveyed as it stood there, I know not. But, for an instant, the shadow of a claw-like hand, from which the third finger was missing, appeared extended over the doomed man's head. And then, as the clock struck one clear silvery stroke, it fell, and a wild shriek rang through the room, a death shriek.
I am not given to fainting, but I certainly confess that the next 10 minutes of my existence was a cold blank, and even when I did manage to stagger to my feet, I gazed round, vainly endeavouring to understand the chilly horror which still possessed me. Thank God, the room was rid of that awful presence. I saw that, so, gulping down some wine, I lighted a wax taper and staggered towards the bed. Ah, how I prayed that, after all, I might have been dreaming, and that my own excited imagination had but conjured up some hideous memory of the dissection room. But one glance was sufficient to answer that. No, the summons had indeed been given and answered. I flashed the light over the dead face, swollen, convulsed still with the death agony, but suddenly I shrank back.
Even as I gazed, the expression of the face seemed to change. The blackness faded into a deathly whiteness. The convulsed features relaxed, and, even as if the victim of that dread apparition still lived, a sad, solemn smile stole over the pale lips. I was intensely horrified, but still I retained sufficient self-consciousness to be struck professionally by such a phenomenon. Surely there was something more than supernatural agency in all this. Again I scrutinized the dead face, and even the throat and chest, but with the exception of a tiny pimple on one temple beneath a cluster of hair, not a mark appeared. To look at the corpse, one would have believed that this man had indeed died by the visitation of God, peacefully, while sleeping.
How long I stood there I know not, but time enough to gather my scattered senses and to reflect that, all things considered, my own position would be very unpleasant if I was found thus unexpectedly in the room of the mysterious dead man. So, as noiselessly as I could, I made my way out of the house. No one met me on the private staircase. The little door opening into the road was easily unfastened, and thankful indeed was I to feel again the fresh wintry air as I hurried along that road by the churchyard. There was a magnificent funeral soon in that church, and it was said that the young widow of the buried man was inconsolable, and then rumours got abroad of a horrible apparition which had been seen on the night of the death. And it was whispered the young widow was terrified and insisted upon leaving her splendid mansion.
I was too mystified with the whole affair to risk my reputation by saying what I knew, and I should have allowed my share in it to remain forever buried in oblivion, had I not suddenly heard that the widow, objecting to many of the legacies in the last will of her husband, intended to dispute it on the score of insanity, and then there gradually arose the rumour of his belief in having received a mysterious summons. On this I went to the lawyer and sent a message to the lady that, as the last person who had attended her husband, I undertook to prove his sanity, and I besought her to grant me an interview in which I would relate as strange and horrible a story as ear had ever heard. The same evening I received an invitation to go to the mansion. I was ushered immediately into a splendid room, and there, standing before the fire, was the most dazzlingly beautiful young creature I had ever seen.
She was very small, but exquisitely made. Had it not been for the dignity of her carriage, I should have believed her a mere child. With a stately bow she advanced, but did not speak. "I come on a strange and painful errand," I began, and then I started, for I happened to glance full into her eyes, and from them down to the small right hand grasping the chair. The wedding ring was on that hand.
I conclude you are the Mr. Keed who requested permission to tell me some absurd ghost story, and whom my late husband mentions here." As she spoke, she stretched out her left hand towards something. But what, I knew not, for my eyes were fixed on that hand. Horror! White and delicate as it might be, but it was shaped like a claw, and the third finger was missing.
One sentence was enough after that. "Madam, all I can tell you is that the ghost who summoned your husband was marked by a singular deformity. The third finger of the left hand was missing," I said sternly, and the next instant I had left that beautiful, sinful presence. That will was never disputed. The next morning, too, I received a cheque for £1,000, and the next news I heard of the widow was that she had herself seen that awful apparition and had left the mansion immediately.
The end.
Ta-da! Spoopy, spoopy. Oh, we love a good story about a murderous wife.
That was very, very fun.
I read a few of them, and this actually, believe it or not, this one had the least complicated English. I read one which was really good, but even I had to Google some of those words. And I know a lot of weird, long, old Victorian words, but like half a whole sentence was just one word. And I was like, okay, no. Ta-da! And that is it! Happy Ghostmas, guys!
It was lovely to be back, and we will return soon.
Just be patient. Thank you guys for being patient this whole time. But just, we must ask for just a little bit more time just to get our shit together. And then we will be right back with you in the new year.
Okay, so thank you so much for listening, and we hope to have you back for next week's episode. If you want to get in touch for any reason, just to say hello or to send us a story of your own true paranormal or spooky experience, please email us at spookygirlspodcast@gmail.com. You can also check us out on Twitter at spookygirlspod and on Instagram at spookygirlspodcast. If you want to support us further, then you can become a patron by going to patreon.com/spookygirls. And from as little as $2 a month, you gain access to bonus episodes and other awesome content that we have planned for the future. Thank you all so much, and we'll see you all next time. Stay spooky.
Goodbye. Merry Christmas.
Yay.